This is Lori Prox here with Dave Stearin, Outreach and Communications Director for Governor Dunleavy, State of Alaska. So, Dave, thanks for joining us yet again. And I'm glad we don't have huge emergencies to talk about, but I did want to talk a little bit about what's happening at the state regarding COVID. Largely, I think information and focus on COVID is dwindling a bit, but definitely still getting case count information out. So I guess we'll start there. How is that looking? We are kind of trending down, and it looks like it's not quite sure what to do right now.
Well, good to be here once again, and it's kind of nice. People are less focused on COVID over the past few weeks and more focused on getting their hunt in for the season. My wife was a voluntary Sherpa with some friends of ours, and day two of a four-day hunt, they got their moose, so she was back early. And now I got to figure out what to do with our share of 1,400 pounds of
now
moose
meat.
Now
the work begins.
Yeah. Today is cutting day, so I'm glad to be at work.
How'd you get out of that? Well, I guess.
I'm here with you.
And you get to you. Well, are you the cook?
I am the cook. Yeah. I'm. Yeah. So, but you know, we do see. I wouldn't necessarily say a decline, but I think people have sort of settled in the realization of positive counts and these numbers. I think whether we've intended to or not, we are far less likely to jump at the shadows of a positive case count. I think now, as more and more testing is occurring, of course, State of Alaska has always been the league leader in testing, or near league leader, but across the country, what we've seen is when you have numbers of people positive for COVID somewhat reflective of regular flu, the morbidity rate is way down. A lot of the mystery is off of COVID. This is what it does. This is what it doesn't do. This is how people usually get it. So I think it's like anything. It's those phases. We're all terrified initially because it was a doomsday scenario. And now, while it's still a cause for some concern, driving is cause for some concern. Every day in life, right now, a bunch of Alaskans are engaged in a somewhat concerning activity of, in many cases, going out in the middle of nowhere, left to their own devices and hunting. And I think the realization of, you know, every day we engage in some risky, air quotes, risky behavior, and we manage it, we're smart, and we come away just fine. And I think more and more Alaskans are realizing that, you know, COVID just falls right into that column. And we encourage people to follow the guidelines. Some communities have been more restrictive than what we've asked them to be, and we have decided not to get into some sort of weird civil war with them. Local community and local community government governs best. And I think you can look back and see where we are and go, you know, that's all things considered, that's pretty doggone good.
And I think you have to ask yourself, and definitely I hope your staff and folks you work with are asking yourself, what is government's role in this? Of course, all the emergency systems set up to kind of jump in and handle the problem and look at different things. And I think a lot of things were put into place. Sometimes we look at things that didn't go well, but I know a lot of recognition. Well, I hope there's a lot of recognition, like the commercial fishermen that came in and did the mitigation plans. Largely successful around the state. So I think it's an opportunity to kind of look and see what, when folks jumped in and presented those plans, and the state played a role in having some guidelines for those plans, and then the private sector in that regard jumped in and kind of said, hey, we want to work. Here's how we plan to do that. But how do you ramp down? What does government do in this space?
I think, you know, that's one of the challenges. How do you transition back to what you were doing before? I mean, how does that, what is the timetable on that? And that is, I mean, honestly, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? What, we were at dinner last night, kids and me and a friend of my son's, and we talked about that. How do you transition now 5 or 6 months of people, you know, basically said, well, if I can't go to work, the government's going to write me a check. If I can't open my doors, there's going to be some sort of program that I can apply for, and that'll hold me over. Well, in Alaska specifically, we've seen that, well, that's clearly not the case. There's a finite amount of funds. I mean, we had over $400 million applied for in the community statewide CARES grant program, of about $287 million available. So clearly there is an enormous demand. Washington, D.C. can't get out of their way to come up with another phase. And I think the frightening thing is, when we look back at all of this, local level, state level, most certainly the federal level, it was very, very easy for government to shut businesses down, and we've seen government isn't so good at covering the damage that their actions have caused. Now, I keep saying this with my regular check-ins with everybody who said, well, why did you do this and why did you do that? I said, make no mistake, we didn't go off a manual, and when we go back to see how we, local communities and the feds responded, there's probably 100 different things with hindsight that we would do differently. And, you know, I always laugh when you look at some governors at some other states saying that we handled it perfectly or it was somebody else's fault. No, nobody handled it perfectly, but what we did do was the best we had with the info we were given and tried to adjust accordingly. And so, you know, most of our, like, heavy restrictions were lifted in mid-May. The only restriction or challenging aspect of state policy has been travel into the state, COVID test, quarantine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And some businesses said that this slowed the rate of tourism. Well, on the West Coast, the state of Alaska's arrival decline was lower than California, Oregon, and Washington, which had, frankly, no restrictions. So we saw more people, at least of the decline, still interested in coming to Alaska with COVID requirements or isolation requirements than any other state on the West Coast, and frankly, top 10 in the nation of the ability to have people land here. So it isn't perfect, but with the triage we had to perform, it's far better than what it could be.
Well, and I think there's no question tourism was down. We see a lot of people from out of state, but I've seen those studies as well that many other states fared far worse when it comes to decline in business due to tourism. And I think we can give a hats off to Alaskans who supported each other during this time, because I know here in Valdez, Fairbanks and Anchorage folks coming to visit in their own state sure helped make it a not a total loss of a season in terms of business and the economy. So I think we're fortunate there. But looking at the economy long term, there's been some damage, and I think probably the biggest, you know, when we talk hotspots, I think Anchorage in terms of economy and damage is probably the big one, with major shutdowns. I know restaurant industry, and they have not seen any relief as far as I'm concerned. You know, I think maybe the payroll protection.
As of right now, the monies that the city of Anchorage has set aside for businesses has yet to be awarded. Any.
And that doesn't just have an impact on Anchorage. I mean, I'm watching that because the entire state, that's our retail hub for many, many things. That's going to, I don't know what you guys do to look at the long-term impact of COVID on the Alaskan economy and where that's, you know, is there anything at the state level to be done there, or?
Well, the challenge that we have, there are several communities that when we issued the CARES block grant funds to those communities, they were very aggressive. Everything could be done faster, but I mean, how do you create a program out of thin air? So you have many communities that, whether it was business grants, individual cash grants, or however they did it, they moved. I mean, areas like the Mat-Su received, like, I don't know, $35, $40 million, or $60 million all in In 5 days, they moved 60% of that money into business grants. They had a portal set up and money flowing out the door in a week. You have other communities that receive less that are still struggling to get money out. Other communities that receive more that are halfway there. And I mean, let's be honest. The state of Alaska had $285 million or so set aside for statewide grants. The city of Anchorage received $157 million, of which I believe the initial grant pool is $6 million, and they're having random drawings for recipients on Thursday. So if you're a business in Anchorage and you've been waiting, you're now forced to try to get money from a different pool of cash that is, you know, frankly, ideally designed as a backup and not a primary. And so when your local communities aren't setting up a CARES grant program, it puts additional stress on the limited resources at the state level. And what is that going to mean long term? There's going to be a lot of businesses that, when the mushroom cloud dissipates, that won't reopen their doors. That's the reality of what we're looking at.
And I know that's one consideration when you look at a government. I think one of the first things that comes out is, how do we do this fairly? We have to be fair to everyone, equal. Matt Sue, do you know how they distributed those business grants? Because, you know, I think here we did kind of an across the board. A household got $1,700. A business got $1,700. But obviously, we had some pretty large businesses that didn't open due to COVID, or, you know, considerably down. And that's not a big chunk of money. Are you aware of how Matt Sue distributed that money to
business? Offhand, I couldn't tell you. I do know this. We received very, 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 very few complaints from the process that the Matt Sue used.
Oh, that might be interesting to check into. But yeah, definitely interesting how that all went out. And then I do want to make note, though, that was passed through by the state to the municipality. So that's perhaps if further funds came down, would that be done the same way again? I put you on the spot.
We've had some questions. I've had that same question for commerce. And that is, so we have the architecture in place of our statewide CARES grant program. If the feds were to release, let's just use round numbers, like $50 million as a number, would we then be able to turn the application switch back on? Would we go to the businesses that applied, but we ran out of cash to award them? And there's still some question as to how that would work. Would we have to go through the RPL process again, collective eye roll? And right now, to be honest, Lori, we just don't know, because we don't know what or how any new federal program or additional monies would be structured.
Yeah, and it's just for folks listening out there who maybe don't have a business or aren't involved in this process. I only can speak from personal experience, and I did apply for the payroll protection. In fact, our payroll was up 30-40% because we were doing so much news, which is not sponsored, right? So, but that was like covers about 2 months of payroll in addition. You know, that's kind of what that was for. There's lots of different rules, but that process and that vetting of the PPP is not done yet. There's not a guarantee that the forms are not filled out to say, hey, I confirm that I got this and it's okay. So there's also a lot of instability with business as well. In terms of, do I apply for it? Then what if you apply for it, you get the money, and then you aren't accepted for that money. So I mean, from months and months ago, folks who had the PPP money used it for employees for a couple months to get along, they still don't know that they get to keep that or that it's all approved, or, you know, the time to do the paperwork is also another consideration in all of this, you know, CARES funding. And thankfully, I haven't applied for the other CARES funding, but it's tough for these folks that are just trying to stay open.
Yeah.
And trying to keep employees, or, you know, working extra because they don't want to take on employees right now. And then your employees left because their kids are at home. All of those things, and then add on top of that trying to figure out the quagmire that is this funding. It's not it's not super simple. So I don't know if you can shed light on that. It's very difficult.
It's complicated, and it's complicated because it's being created from scratch. And honestly, you're trying to avoid these stories of fraud that seem to follow every sort of big infusion of cash that the feds dole out. You want to help people, and you want to make sure that people aren't gaming the system to deny resources from people who really need it. So, like I said, there's no perfect methodology to just throw cash out the window, the level of which, frankly, the market needed for liquidity in a manner that doesn't, you know, prevent some of that cash from just being wasted.
For folks listening here locally in Valdez, though, I do know our community and economic development department with the city of Valdez is they've taken classes and gone to lots of training on the CARES funding. So if there are questions, they're available to take those questions here locally. So that's a nice service. I just want to mention that, that we're aware of. So very good. And airport testing, is that going well? It sounds like a lot of the wrinkles have been ironed out.
You're seeing a decrease in throughput, fall season and that. Matter of fact, my daughter came back from Texas a couple weeks ago. She was a minor traveling alone, so they wouldn't test her at the airport. Next morning, we took her to the Providence Testing Center, got her test back. 48 hours later, 2 days later, after the results, we got her tested again, and so she's got two negatives. I'm sure everybody has a different experience, but the average turnaround for Alaskans' turnaround time is about 2 days. So when we started, it was 10 days to 3 weeks, and now it's 2 days. And I think, by and large, it's just like any policy. The initial implementation is far more onerous than the actual policy once it's up and going.
And we do have rapid testing now here in Valdez, so that's definitely important with our schools open, because the kids require a test in order. So even if they have a runny nose, doesn't matter what for, or if they're feeling better the next day, but they need to have that test before they can come back to the school. So that was a little tricky at first, but I think everyone understands the process, and and then having the faster tests certainly makes it more easier to implement, I guess. So
yeah, it just helps in initially isolating people who may have it and they don't know it. I mean, it just works, and you can now look at several months of best practices, and it's just working. Hospitalization rates remain low, morbidity rates remain low, and so it's just working. And you know, here as I get ready to check out now, I mean, we are in this office, we are not transitioning away from COVID, but we are working on the budget. We are working on preparing for the 2021 legislative session. The governor is working with his leg team to put his legislative priorities together. And so while we will continue to provide updates, and Commissioner Crum and his great team providing updates, we still have a plane to fly, and we are resetting here at the governor's office to make sure Alaskans have leadership that they need well beyond COVID.
From an organizational standpoint, at the statewide level, I know that a lot of those positions remain the same. COVID didn't change those. People just put on an additional hat, right, in the roles that they had. But it did ramp up the whole statewide unified command. So how does that dynamic work, and what role does the governor have with that unified command? Who ultimately says, hey, you know, is it declaring an emergency? Is it, you know, what is it that kind of keeps those cogs moving or slows those cogs down?
Well, the medical team at Department of Health and Social Services stood up the emergency response center. And so you you have those folks, and they continue to monitor it. Governor is briefed daily. It's just that when you sign up for a job, it's also other duties as assigned, and COVID is one of those other duties that just adds another layer of complexity to everybody's job. And I mean, you sign up for knowing that you don't know. And I think this is my personally first job in government, so I will be quite glad to cycle back to concerns about the budget, concerns about the role of government in Alaska, and leave COVID in my distant rearview mirror.
Yeah. So with the election coming up, of course, it's just around the corner, and lots of candidates with information and ads out there, and so. From the governor's standpoint, what are his objectives in the next few months? What are the main things to focus on, and does that change after the election?
Oh, I think right now what the governor wants is Alaskan voters across the state to realize that this legislature that they are voting for is going to be tasked with some of the most challenging policy questions of the past 30 to 40 years. We've always had budget challenges, and most of the time we've had the luxury of more money than we know what to do with, and so we've just spent it. But now we have those challenges acute, minimal cash reserves, and oh, by the way, a state that is emerging from a pandemic-related shutdown. So usually elections are nothing more than a popularity contest with some voters. Now it has to be an honest-to-goodness job interview. And people will need to be voting for people who tell them what they need to hear and not necessarily what they want to hear. And all the governor wants are a group of legislators that he can work with that not necessarily agree with him, but understand the gravity of the situation. And, you know, once this office sees what that team looks like, and we'll set forth our legislative policies and come up with some ways to move the state forward and probably hit a hard reset by the end of the 2021 legislative session.
Can you speak to any of the propositions?
I mean, no. I have my own personal thoughts, but no.
And then that's not
that's
something
the one thing I miss from my old job. Oh, I could wax nostalgic with you, Lori, but no.
Yeah, and the governor doesn't take a stand on it.
People have to vote, and we certainly don't want to get in the middle of that.
All right, and the governor's office doesn't really take a stand on any of the propositions.
No,
on the
we
ballot.
Haven't yet, and I mean, if we do, I'll tell you. But I certainly haven't seen any movement in us coming out on any of those issues. Frankly, right now, that may change, but right now, I don't have any info on that.
Well, and how are the elections changing? Because I know things are all different. Everything's different, but. I know a lot of people count on that mailed election ballot to actually, you know, you hear the ads, but you're not really sure if that's the content of the ad or not. So I always like to read the exact verbiage of what's on the ballot. So and I know I depend on that mailed pamphlet from the state of Alaska. So are there any different plans or what are the plans in terms of getting out election info?
The primary statewide primary election, frankly, went off quite well. And now it's just larger in scale. The architecture is in place, and now you're just expanding the numbers and the volume, of course, exponentially. But you know, there are people who wait to the last minute. There are people who vote the moment they get their ballot. There are people who vote like me the moment early voting starts, just because it's easy for me to do on my lunch break. And people at all points in between. So the Lieutenant Governor and the Division of Elections did a great job in the primary, and we had no cases of poll workers getting COVID or anything like that. I mean, it just worked. And a lot of this fear-mongering that you hear either locally or nationally of elections can't be done safely and, you know, going to the polls is a death trap, it's just utter bunk. It is fear-mongering tactics by people who, frankly, I don't even know what their agenda is.
Well, I know here if there's three people other than myself in the polls. It's a big day. So yeah. And I, and our election crew takes it very seriously here. So hats off to them. I think it's very, we're very fortunate. It's done very professionally here. So hats off to our,
well, Lori, I've got a dash. I'm a little tardy, but I do appreciate our time and look forward to chatting with you next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thank you. Bye.